Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to a Thursday night edition of our Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. It is wonderful to see. Welcome back. Shalom Aleichem. And help yourself to some chicken wings while I teach some Torah. Okay, first idea comes from a medrash. Very beginning of the parsha, Vayira Elav Adonai Be'Elohim Amrevu Hu Yoshev Pesach O'Kachom Hayom. Of course, Avram Avinu is sitting in Elohim Amre, which are the plains of Mamre, and that's, of course, where the angels are going to come and visit him. Don't you think it's strange that Mamre gets this big kavod, that we're introduced to Avram in this week's Parsha and Mamre? Who was Mamre, and what made him worthy of having Avram receive the angels in that place? So the Medrash tells us, B'shash Amar Kosh Baruch Hu Avram Limol, that when Hashem told Avram to get a bris milah, Halach v'nimlach begimel o'avav. So he went to three people that he trusts. He goes to Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. Now, why does he go to Aner, Eshkol, Mamre? Don't you think that's strange? Here Hashem comes to Avram and says, Avram Avinu, you have to have a bris milah. Avram says, hold on, time out. I'm going to go ask three friends. I'm not going to ask my Jewish. I'm going to ask three non-Jewish friends whether or not they think I should get a bris milah. Does that question sound a little funny to you when I position it that way? It's a little strange. So if you look on the bottom of the page, the Gur Aryeh, the Maharal says, no, there's a reason why he had to ask Mamre. Lest people think that Avram Avinu was caught up in this rush of love for Hashem, and therefore he was mindlessly following everything Hashem said, the Torah introduces that he asked someone for advice. In other words, showing that Avram didn't just do this because he was having this ecstatic love for Hashem, and he was just following whatever Hashem... No, this was well thought out. And though, even though it was well thought out, he was still committed to doing that. That's what the Maharal says. He says, V'hashta kolom yomru, achar sheshal etzav hashama divrei amochin, v'afilo hachiyasa. Even though you asked for advice, you still went ahead and do it. Right? So the example would be, you know, someone who gets so passionate about something that they run to do it. But the second they stop and they think about it, they're not as passionate about it anymore. So that's what the world thought would happen to Avram. The world thought that Avram becomes passionate about Bris Milah. He's in love with Hashem. He's like a Shana Aleph kid. But all of a sudden, you create a little break. You make him think about it. Now, maybe not so much. So Hashem says he goes and asks Mamre to show that even though Avram had a chance to think about it, and Avram had a chance to rethink it, he doesn't rethink it, he's still committed, that shows the greatness of Avram Avinu. He says, we see this also by the Akedah. Why does it mean that it took him 3 days to get to the Akedah? Hashem couldn't have caused Kfitzas Aderech. Hashem couldn't have caused it to be a faster journey. We see Hashem do that all the time. So why did he need to make Avram walk 3 days? Exactly the same point. If it was a quick thing, then he would have said, okay, in the rush of passion, Avram went to do the Akedah. But he had time to think about it, he never would have done it. Hashem says, okay, I'm going to give you 3 days. And even though you're going to do it despite the fact that you have 3 days, that's going to show you really want to do it. That's the Maharal. But listen to the Medrash now. Okay, now let's continue on in the Medrash, because I think the Medrash is teaching us a very different lesson. Again, our question was, who is Mamre? And what makes him worthy of this appearance in the Parsha? And so the Medrash says that Avram went and asked three people. He asked Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre. And we asked a second question. We said, don't you think that's weird that Avram Avinu was commanded to get a bris milah from Hashem, and he says, time out, I want to go ask my three non-Jewish neighbors? That's like a very strange thing to do. Am I going to daven at the early minyan this Friday or the late minyan? Let me go ask my non-Jewish neighbor what they think I should daven at tonight. Right? Like, that's an absurd proposition. That's exactly what Avram Avinu says. Listen to the Medrash, it's going to blow your mind away. Amar lo Aner. So Aner now responds to Avram. He says, Kvar ben kuf shanata ve'ata holecha mitzares atzmecha. He says, what are you getting a bris milah for? You're 100 years old. Have some mercy on you. You can't go through surgery at 100 years old. And so Aner tries to convince Avram not to do it. Amar lo Eshkol. Now the second one comes along and says, Ma ta holeichu misayim es asmecha bein sonecha. He says, what are you going to do? You're going to look so different. Here you're trying to, remember we spoke about this last week a little bit. You're trying to get the whole world to adopt monotheism. You want to make them love you, and you're going to be best buddies with them, and all of a sudden you're going to get a bris milah. They're going to think you're weird. They're going to think you're different. How are you going to convert people? How are you going to convince people to be more like you if you have a sign on you that says, I'm different than you? If you're sitting at the business event and you have your dinner that's wrapped 35 times, how is someone going to cut a deal with you? They're not going to have anything to do with you. That was Eshkol's answer. Amar lo Mamre. Now listen to Mamre. Mamre comes along and says, Elokecha she'at amar lecha b'kivshan ha'is u'b'melachim v'ravon v'adavar hazesh amar lecha lamol ein ata shomeya. He says, this God who saved you from the fiery furnace, you're not going to listen to him? Of course you should listen to him. He endorses it completely. And so says the Medrash, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem says about Mamre, because you convinced Avram to get the Bris Milah, so I'm now going to have Giloy Shechina, I'm going to reveal myself in your area. What do I find so amazing about this Medrash? This Medrash represents a conversation internally that I think every single Jew in the diaspora has. Every single Jew. There's the Jew who has that internal voice of Aner, who comes along and says, you know what, I'm going to start learning, I'm going to start making minyan, I'm going to start doing this. And then there's a voice that creeps in and says, you're 44, you're 50, you're 60, you're 70, you're 80 years old. What are you going to start changing now? Everyone's going to think you're too frum. You're 100 years old. Just let it be. Let it be. You've done enough. You've accomplished. This is what your Judaism looks like. Why should you change? So I think there's a voice inside of everybody that's like on air. Then I think there's a voice inside everyone that's like Eshkol. The voice that says, but if I do this, they're going to think I'm weird. If I wear a kippah, they're going to think I'm weird. If I wear my tzitzis, if I wear my tzitzis out, they're going to think I'm weird. If I go to a business meeting and I look a certain way or act a certain way or eat a certain way, so I'm going to stand out too much. So there's a voice inside of us like Eshkol that says, you know what, if I just don't differentiate myself, maybe then they'll like me and maybe then they'll respect me. The godless of Mamre is that when it comes to Mamre, Mamre comes along and says, even though you're going to be different, that's okay. It's not okay to cower in fear. It's not okay to be apologetic. It's not okay to be ashamed. No one's going to be inspired by that, Avram. No one's going to be motivated to join Judaism by someone who's apologetic about what they stand for. You know what people are going to be drawn by? They're going to be drawn by someone who's passionate, who's unapologetic, who's inspired, and who stands by their convictions and is proud of their values. That conversation of Mamre, I think, is the conversation that speaks the most to us. Because what was Avram really struggling with? Avram was struggling with the struggle of contemporary Judaism, which says, how much should I stand out? How much should I not stand out? How much should I make myself different? How much should I make myself the same? And I think there's a piece of Avram that really understood Eshkol's perspective, where he says, here I am, I'm trying to convince people, I'm trying to inspire people. If I look different, how am I supposed to do that? How am I supposed to convince them to join me if I look like an alien to them? Amamri comes along and says, no, you have it all wrong. People don't respond to people who are apologetic. They respond to people who stand by their convictions. People are inspired by people who are proud of their values, and people are inspired by people who are on a higher moral ground, not by someone who's apologetic, not by someone who's ashamed, not by someone who is cowering. And so this conversation that Avram has internally, this mussar that Mamre gives him, I think is an important lesson for all of us. And that is the greatest gift that we can give ourselves, and the greatest gift that we can give our children, and the greatest gift that we can give our grandchildren is a confidence in their Judaism. A confidence that says that even though you're going to be different, even though you're going to look different, even though you're going to act different, it's okay. People will respect you more if you stand by your convictions rather than if you are apologetic. And that's what Mamre convinces. Comes along the Medrash and says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Atana Sata Lo Eitz Alamul, because you gave Avram the advice to have a bris milah, Chayecha She'ani Nigla Alav, that I'm going to reveal myself not in the palace of Aner and not in the palace of Eshkol, Ela Bepaltin Shecha, but it's going to be in your plains. And that is where Mamre is. We asked a question. We said, who is Mamre? What did he do to be deserving of it? So now we know the answer. The answer is that Mamre convinced Avram that it was okay to be different, and despite his different, he can in fact be just as impactful because people will respect him. People will respect him when he's proud. People will respect him when he's unapologetic. People will respect him when he's unashamed. And I think for us, living in the generation that we are living in, this is the message that we need. It's the conversation that Avram has in his head. How will people see me? How can I be an Av Hamon Goyim if I'm going to be different? How will they respect me if I look like a stranger? And Mamre comes along and says, that's exactly the point. Even though the Jew is different, But if you're unapologetic in that, people will be inspired by that. I think it's such an amazing Musar. I think it's such an amazing Medrash. And I forgot to mention, I heard that in the name of Rav Amital. So it's a very beautiful idea. That is idea number one, which I think is personally my favorite idea of the night, but you guys can tell me afterwards. Okay. Idea number two comes from a very bizarre pasuk. This is in the beginning of the 20th chapter. I'm going to read you the pasuk. Now again, Avram was just in Sodom. That was the whole story of Sodom. All of a sudden, the pasuk starts off and says, "Vayisa Meisham Avram." Avram goes from where that place used to be. Arza Hanega Vayeshe Ben Karnesh Ben Kadesh Ben Shur. He goes to the south, in between Kadesh and Shur. Vayagar Bigrar, and he sojourns, which means like he maintains a house also in Gerar. Now, why is Avram traveling all of a sudden? And why does he seem to have two houses? First it says he lives in Bein Kadesh Ubein Shur, which is in the Negev. And then it says that he also lives in Gerar. What do you need the two of them? So if you look on page number two, Rashi addresses this. And Rashi says, why is Avram, Vayisa Misham Avram, why is Avram traveling? Kishara Shecharvu HaKrachim Upasku Avram VeHashavim. What happened? Sodom and the four other cities just got destroyed. You know what's really bad for Kiruv? It's really bad for Kiruv if nobody lives there anymore. If everyone got wiped out in the destruction of Sodom, not a lot of business for Avram. So Avram realizes that if he wants to get business, he's got to move. So Rashi first says that Avram moves because there was no business. There was no one there anymore. So Nasa Misham, therefore he travels. Daval Acher, Lisrachek Milot. Now he sees that Sodom was destroyed. He sees that Lot does what he does with his two daughters. Word is getting out. There are rumors around about what Lot did. That's a pretty bad reflection of Avram. And so Avram says, I got to get away from this guy as fast as possible. Sheyatza alav shemra shebaal ben osav. Everyone heard that he did incest. And Avram says, I got to get away from Lot as quickly as possible. That's Rashi. Rashi as to why Avram was traveling, either because it was bad for business, and he had to move for better to open his store, or because that it was of what happened with Lot and the daughters, and he wanted to escape that. The Radak, if you look in the next source, the Radak says differently. The Radak says, if you're trying to convince people to convert to Judaism, so do you buy a house in Boca and stay there forever? No, what do you got to do sometimes? You might have a house in Boca, but you're going to go to Texas, and you're going to go to LA, you're going to travel around the country. You can't just sit in Boca and expect to impact the world. Again, this was before the days of, you know, of Zoom Shirim and Facebook Shirim, and, right? This, if you wanted to reach the people, you know where you had to go? You had to take it to them. And so says the Radak, that's why it's Vayisa Misham Avram. That's why Avram is traveling. He says, Kedei l'shachin b'chol ha'aretz, asher nasan lo akel, pam bazeh, pam bazeh. He's going around. Sometimes he's here, sometimes he's there. Kedei sheyachzik b'kula, because he wants to get to everybody. Again, you didn't have the internet. You couldn't give shirim online. So you had to travel. You had to travel around the country. That's what Avram was doing here. That's the Radak. Listen to this comment from Rav Hirsch. And I would like to thank the person who purchased the new, much more reader-friendly version of Rav Hirsch for enabling me to learn this and to present this Dvar Torah for you. Again, Rav Hirsch deals with our question. He says, what were the reasons for these two contrasting actions? On the one hand, Avram has a permanent residence. That's between Kadesh and Shur. But he also has now a temporary residence in Gerar. What is this? Avram was just wealthy? So he's got like his house in, you know, Muncie, in his winter house in Boca? Is that what this was? Says Rav Hirsch, no, no, no. He says, we have seen that Avram initially sought to isolate himself and his household from the atmosphere in society of the cities. For this reason, he first settled in the desolate south. Why does he come south? Not like Rashi, not like Radak, but he goes south specifically to get away from everybody. He wants to protect himself from the negative influences of society around him. Okay, next paragraph. Now we see him in his waning years returning to the south. He settles between Kadesh and Shur in an isolated, uninhabited area near the wilderness of Shur, which is known as a complete wasteland. At the same time, however, he seeks contact with city life and occasionally stays in Gerar, the capital of the Plishtim kings. Unless we are totally mistaken, we would venture to say that what prompted Avram and Sarah to change their place of residence was the expectation of the imminent birth of their son. A Yitzchak Yitzchak should be educated in isolation, far removed from negative influence. So again, he's going to raise Yitzchak. He can't have him around idolaters. He can't have him around negative influences. So where does he go? He goes down south. He goes to an uninhabited wasteland, figuring that if he can raise Yitzchak there, he can fully protect him from everywhere else. But then Avram has a problem. Because what happens if you raise a child in a complete bubble? Eventually, what's going to happen? Eventually, they'll have exposure. And when they have that exposure, they're not going to know what to deal with it. It's going to be like completely alien and foreign to them. Says reverse. Now, what's great about this, not just the idea, but it's like l'shitaso. I think it's so reflective of Hirsch's hashkafa. He says, on the other hand, complete isolation, which denies the student all contact with people who think differently and whose aims and way of life differ from his own, is a dangerous educational mistake. You can't completely shield kids. A young person who has never seen a way of life other than that of his parents, never had an opportunity to compare his parents' lifestyle with that of others, and never learned to appreciate the moral contrast between the two, will never learn to value, respect, and hold fast to the ways his parents have taught him. In other words, if your children don't appreciate the beauty of what you're teaching them because they have a contrast of what the alternative looks like, they're never going to really fully appreciate it. So he says that, and therefore he says, he will surely fall victim to outside influences at the first encounter with them. Just as one who fears the fresh air and closets himself in a room can be sure of catching a cold as soon as he goes outdoors. It's a great analogy, right? The people who, I don't want to say whatever, but if you try to shield yourself so much, so eventually you make yourself so protected from germs that the second you're exposed to germs, you're going to get sick. The doctors here can correct or refresh afterwards or not. But then he says, Avram's son, the future bearer of Avram's heritage, should from the time to time have to enter into the world that is alien in the spirit of Avram. So what does Avram do? He creates a balance. On the one hand, he lives in isolation. He protects Yitzchak. But he also gives him just enough exposure so that he knows that the world is out there and he knows the dangers of the world out there. He can have those conversations with his father where his father says, yeah, there's something called technology. Technology has huge advantages, but technology is really dangerous. And you have to know that part of growing up is how to navigate technology. And you're going to be exposed. You're going to have a computer. There's certain things you're going to be exposed to. And the Avram realizes that if he does it in a safe, protected way, then he can benefit Yitzchak even more in the long term. He says there he can evaluate opposing ideas and strengthen himself to keep to the ways of Avram in a world that is opposed to him. For this purpose, Avram chooses the capital of the Plishtim. So he lives in isolation, but he also exposes them to Lahavdil Times Square, right? He exposes them to the world out there. In the land of the Plishtim, the degeneracy had apparently not spread to the extent that it reached Canaan. Hence, the Plishtim were not subject to destruction. Okay, fine. What a beautiful suggestion. Again, we had a question. Why is Avram traveling around? And if he is traveling around, why does he have two residences? Is it just he has a winter home and a summer home? Is it more than that? So we said Rashi has his two interpretations of why Avram is traveling now. We saw the Radak had his interpretation of why Avram is traveling now. Rav Hirsch, I think, is so much more beautiful and nuanced. Rav Hirsch says that Avram is teaching us an educational model. An educational model where, yes, you have to shield your kids. There's so much negativity out there in the world. There's so much danger out there in the world. And you'd be a fool to just expose your kids to all of it in an unfettered fashion. No one would say that's the correct approach to parenting. And so, yes, we believe in boundaries. We believe in restrictions. We believe in programs that help kids navigate technology. Of course, 100%. That's what our job as parents is. On the other hand, to totally deny it, to not pretend that at some point they're going to be exposed to that, Avram Avinu says that that's not the correct approach either. And so he lives in isolation, but every now and then he takes Yitzchak to the big city. And when they go to the big city, they have a conversation about the dangers and benefits of technology. They have a conversation about, are Western values entirely in line with Jewish values? Are Western values not entirely in line with Jewish values? And instead of having other people teach that to Yitzchak, Avram allows himself to teach that to Yitzchak in a protected, safe fashion. Says Rav Hirsch, this isn't just about Avram having a winter home and a summer home. Avram is teaching us an educational model for how it is that we both protect ourselves, but also ensure that our children don't have a shock when they eventually go out into the workforce or into the world. That is a beautiful idea from Rav Hirsch. So again, idea number one came from the Medrash of Mamre, of what it means to be a Jew. That to be a Jew is not apologetic and ashamed and cowering. that even though we're different, but we still are proud, and we're still, and we still are, that'll still allow us to inspire others. Idea number two came from Rav Hirsch, an educational model that we have to protect our children. I want to emphasize that again. Rav Hirsch emphasized that. We have to protect our children. We live in a scary, dangerous world where, unfortunately, we are always behind our children. Like it or not, we are always playing catch-up. Our children will always know more than we will. They're going to understand AI better than we are. They're going to understand social media. We are always playing catch-up. So we do, as our parents, grandparents, we have to do our best to protect our children. And we'd be fools not to. But on the other hand, Avram says, every now and then he took him to the city. He had thoughtful conversations. He made sure that Yitzchak understood that there is a world out there and the dangers of the world out there and how to navigate that world. That is idea number two. Idea number three comes from Rav Zevin. I think this might be our first Rav Zevin quote. And have I quoted him before? I don't think so. I think this is our first quote. Beautiful Sefer LaTorah VeLaMoadim. I got this Sefer because of this vort. I was at a friend's Ufruf. Oh boy, I can go back. But 20 plus years ago. And the Rav of the Shul quoted this vort from Rav Zevin. And I said, I have to get the Sefer. So I went home and got the Sefer. And I should probably use it more. But here's this vort. The Pasuk says in the Parsha, Vayita Eshel Beber Shava, Vayikra Shem, Sham B'Shem Hashem, Kel Olam. That Avram plants an Eshel. What's an Eshel? So Rashi famously says, Shnei Perushim Al Eshel. There's two suggestions. One is a Pardes, and one is a Pundak. What is a Pardes? A Pardes is a vineyard, and a Pundak is an inn, like a hotel, a motel. So says Rav Zevin, what's the difference between them? Right? Whenever Rashi gives two suggestions, it's not just like he picked out of a hat. There's symbolism to that. What's the difference between a vineyard and an inn? So he says, Pardes upundak heim ilanos ubais. One is a house and one is a vineyard of trees. V'yesh be'ilan she'ein babayis. V'yesh babayis she'ein be'ilan. That there are advantages that a house has over a vineyard and there are advantages that a vineyard has over a house. Koach shela ilan, what's the advantage of the vineyard? A vineyard can regenerate itself. So for example, I have a tree outside my house that because my sprinklers were broken and I am not up when my sprinklers go off at 4 a.m, and it took me about 4 months to realize that my sprinklers are broken. How did I realize it? When I looked outside one morning and realized that a tree had almost died. Okay, so I called the guy, he fixed my sprinklers. And then, slowly but surely, we nursed the tree back to life. A tree that had all but been dead was able to regenerate itself. We don't experience it as much here, but those who grew up in New England know this very well. What season are we coming into? Winter. Well, we're not. Fall. That just shows you. And in New England, what does fall mean, Dr. Agion? Foliage. Right? You drive up the Merritt Parkway, and this time of the year, it's stunning. It's magnificent. All the leaves are changing color. And what's going to happen right after the leaves change color? They all fall off and the trees are going to look dead. Actually, all of the Northeast looks dead during that time of the year. It's dark and gloomy and gray, right? And then it regenerates itself around, June time. Okay, so for the next 8 months, those who are listening, you're welcome to join us here in Florida. Okay, right. So, but what do you see? That trees have an advantage. Trees can, quote unquote, die and then they can grow back. On the other hand, what don't trees have? Trees don't protect you a lot, right? When I'm walking home on Shabbos in the summer and you get those like sudden torrential downpours and you try hiding under a tree and then you realize that ain't helping. And then you lean into it and you dry clean your suit afterwards, right? So a tree on the one hand is eternal in the sense that it can always regenerate itself, but it's not going to provide you for a lot of protection. Avaluma zebabayis. He says a house is the exact opposite. Bisman kiyumo, when you have the house, al kopanim hanaso tadira. A good house with air conditioning, certainly pleasant. It's a beautiful, we're indoors right now. It's very comfortable in this room right now, right? But what's the problem with the house? The problem with the house, you could ask, it's too soon, Eric Spolstra, Rachmana Litzlan. Right, but what happens to a house if a house gets destroyed? It's gone, right? You can rebuild the house, but you're rebuilding a new house. That same house isn't going to pop itself up again. So he says there's a difference between a vineyard and a house. A vineyard has the advantage that it regenerates itself on its own. It's eternal. On the other hand, it doesn't provide a lot of protection. A house provides that protection. It's comfortable, it could be beautiful. But on the other hand, if that house ever gets knocked down, you're going to have to build a new one because that can never regenerate on its own. Says Rav Zevin, now turn the page. He says, this is the beauty of Avram. He says, Aval beiso shel Avram avinu yesh bo shtei hamailos. Avram had the best of both. Shnei hakochos, the best of the vineyard and the best of the house. Shel pardes v'shel pundak ke'echad. He had both of them. On the one hand, Avram's house, habayit shel Avram avinu shu semel shabayis Yehudi, which of course is the paradigm of what a Jewish house should look like. So on the one hand, it's like the pundak. It's a comfortable place. It's a place with food and drink that I can welcome in guests, and I can have people comfortably stay for me. That, he says, is what a Jewish house should be. A Jewish house should be a place that's constantly overflowing with guests. Why? Because it's a comfortable place. On the other hand, what should that Jewish house also be? It should be the best of a vineyard. Bais kazehu nitzchi v'kim la'ad. It's not just temporary. It's not fleeting. It's not like, this year I'm on fire and next year I'm checked out. No, it's eternal. V'yamav kimea eitz. V'yaf hanaso tadira kadira kigdarko shel bais. So it's the best of the house and best of the vineyard. It's the best of the house that it's comfortable, that we open it up for guests, the same way Avram's house was. On the other hand, it's not temporary, and it's not fleeting. It's not generational. It's not here one day, gone the next. But we believe that if you cultivate a Jewish house, that's why he quotes the idea of a mezuzah. If we cultivate a Jewish house based on eternal values, then our house therefore becomes eternal. Think about it. You are sitting here in the year 5786. That is amazing that there are Jews living richly Jewish lives in 5086. That is illogical and irrational that after so many years, the traditions and the Mesorah and the mitzvos of thousands of years ago is still being practiced to this day. And the values of Judaism and the values of our Mesorah are being carried on ish mi piish, literally generation after generation as a chain. I think a few years ago, I had this amazing statistic. Someone I saw, some rabbi, calculated how many generations we are removed from Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now, by generation, I mean, right, if there's a father in the middle, so there's a son and a grandfather, like, how many of those go back? It's not as many as you think. It's actually not as many as you think. Some mathematician, I got in trouble for referencing my brother last week. He got a lot of, but I'm guessing if my brother hears about this, he's the mathematician of the family, he could probably figure this out. Right? I'm sure you can as well, right? The actuaries amongst us could figure this out. Okay, but it's not a lot. The fact that we're still celebrating a Pesach, the fact that we're going to have a Hanukkah soon, that's amazing, right? That's the eights. That's the nitzchias. That's the eternality of the Jewish people. That we're still practicing Judaism thousands of years later, despite every odd against us, that's amazing. On the other hand, while we're like an eights in the sense that we are eternal, we're also like the bias, that there's a certain stability, that there's a certain openness, that there's a certain comfort, that we're not the tree that's eternal but can't provide protection. No, our houses should be open, and they should be filled with Achnasas Orchim, and they should be filled with joyousness and things that can only be accomplished when you have air conditioning and heat possible. Our houses should be like that also. So Rav Zevin said, based on Rashi, the Rashi says, what is this Eshel? It's either a pardes or a pundak. It's either an inn or a vineyard. Says Rav Zevin, no, it's both. It's both. Avram represents both the best of what they are, and that is the model for what a Jewish house should be. A Jewish house should be comfortable, it should be welcoming, it should be open, it should be fun, it should be happy, it should be comfortable, but it also represents a nitzchias. It also represents a sense of eternality as reflected by the tree. And so we saw, I thought all three of these were gems. Idea number one came from the Medrash, based on Rav Amital, Mamre. Why is Mamre get so much love? The answer is because when everyone else was telling Avram, you can't be different, and if you're different, they're not going to think you're weird. Mamre comes along and says, no, the opposite. Avram, get the bris milah. And if you get the bris milah, they'll respect you more. And therefore, I think it's a reflection on us as Jews. How much are we afraid to display our Judaism? How much are we ashamed or apologetic versus how proud are we? In recognizing that the more proud we are in our Judaism, the more it will inspire others. We don't hide our Star of Davids on college campuses. We display them with more pride, obviously in a safe fashion, but we display them with more pride. Idea number two came from Rav Hirsch, the beautiful idea of why is Avram traveling and how could he live in two places? He's living in the south, but also in Gerar. So Rav Hirsch explained, no, he was teaching us an educational model that on the one hand, we have to shield our children. On the other hand, we have to make sure that they have enough exposure to understand the dangers of society around them and how to protect themselves from it. And idea number three, this beautiful idea from Rav Zevin, what was the Eishel that Avram built? For those who want to look up, that's in Chaf Aleph Lam Gimel. So he says it's either a pardes, a vineyard, or a puntak. And Rav Zevin pointed out that there were advantages to each. The pardes, the vineyard, is eternal. It regenerates itself. The puntak, the house, it doesn't do that, but it provides stability. It provides an openness for allowing guests. Avram's was the best of both. And that's ultimately what we should be modeling our homes afterwards. And with that, I wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos.